Oh, Thank you. Yeah, I think it is. Can I just take you to our webpage with the rest of the info? Oh, if that doesn't do it, try utosf.org. Oh, okay. And you can hear it? Test. Test.
I don't hear it. Coming through your speakers?
Oh. Nice.
So I wish I had more time to prepare for this. Probably only take about maybe 5 to 10 minutes at most. If you have any questions, you can certainly ask me. So basically, let me start by saying what my interest in this was. I was charged with writing a front end to a database at where I work. And I first started out thinking that Django was the way to go because it came with a lot already. Then I got turned off by all the JavaScript I'd have to write. So I started searching around for something else, and I thought, why don't I try OpenOffice Base? I found out it could be scripted with Python, except turned out to be not as good as I expected, and I sort of gave up on it after I played around with it for about a week. The database form views were not very good. They looked kind of rough still. Like, there's a lot of refining that still needed to be done on the UI. And in order to get any kind of a functionality going in the back end, I also got kind of turned off by how much code I'd have to write and learn at that, and all of the documentation I saw beyond the Hello World Python examples was read the Java code, and I wasn't necessarily interested in reading a lot of Java, so I went back to Django. But anyway, so Microsoft recently pushed through their old XML thing in the ISO. I don't know why they cared that much, seeing that the little of OpenOffice I've seen is pretty enterprise all by itself. I guess they wanted something more enterprise. And you'll see that in a second. So the cool thing about OpenOffice is you can script it with Python. It's one of, I think there's C++, Java, and this language called Star Basic, which is, I guess, some variant of Basic. So there's this cool graphic here. You can appreciate that, I guess. Typically, OpenOffice bundles its own version of Python along with everything else. Probably has its own copy of Fortune, too. I'm just guessing. So they've only got 2.4 in there. I think it says it. Oh, 2.3. But, so, I just recently got Ubuntu on this so that I could do this presentation, so I could get OpenOffice on it without any problems. And I was kind of pleasantly surprised that Ubuntu had, it uses the Ubuntu OpenOffice package uses the distro's version of Python, which was nice. So I'm just going to show you a couple of scripts. Actually, so there's basically two models to how you use Python with OpenOffice. There's this one. I think it all fits. Well, you can see. So you have OpenOffice running all by itself, and you run Python alone, and it just has a simple IDC. So you can do that. And then there's this one where you actually have Python running in the UNO process inside of OpenOffice. And with this version, I learned about two different ways you can do this. One is you can actually embed a file URL to your script. Well, actually embed your Python script in your OpenOffice file, because it's just XML, so you unpack it and add it in there with a couple of tabs or whatever. Or you can do the more simple version, which I'll show you, which is to just select the file from the GUI. So let me show you the first thing I'm going to show you. First of all, you can see that I started OpenOffice with this big ugly command. That's important for this first model. So it knows how to connect this black arrow thing there. So we've got all of those arguments in, and it's running. It's running on this workspace here. So now I'm gonna run this little script here. Yeah, but I'm not gonna do anything. Which variables? You mean? Oh yeah. There's something about. Sorry. Okay. I don't claim to understand all of this code right here. So you import the UNO, whatever that is, and set up a bunch of this stuff here. The really interesting line right here is that. So we're going to do that. Well, whatever. Despite that happening, we got that in our writer file, which is really useful to insert random text into your documents from Python. Okay, so there's that. That illustrates this kind of scheme. And, you know, I really glossed over this here, but there you have full access to the OpenOffice API from Python. So I'm not exactly sure to what extent that has significance, but it's probably pretty powerful. Anything you could script with Java, basically you can script with Python. And I'm sure you can find plugins, Python plugins on the web that you can look at. I'll show you some of those towards the end. Okay, now let me show you this scheme here. So, in order to do this, we need to put the script in this path right here. Depending on your distro, it'll be a little different. Of course, Windows is a lot different. So I've done that. You can see that. So I'm going to run this dialog here. So I go to my macros and run, and it finds it. This neat little drawing here illustrates all of that. So, right. And this is the code behind that. It's a lot of boilerplate, just for a crummy dialog box. Let me show you the other one. Yeah? The other one. Yeah, the navigating through the menus. Navigate through the menus. And a lot of code. This one? I think a lot of it is this one goes through laboriously setting up all of these geometrical parameters. Yeah, right. This one. Yeah. So that's basically all, about as far as I got. Anybody have any questions? I'm pretty sure this is you can do a lot of cool stuff with this if you have the patience to learn the API, which I didn't. I may at some point when I have more motivation. So there's some code that's already been written. Well, each one has its advantages. I read through all of the intro documentation, and they basically said it's like you develop with the IPC, and then when you want to deploy something, you either put it in the shared library, custom library, or you embed it in the document. So you seem pretty logical, which is the second mode. There's a lot of examples. To connect OpenOffice Base to a Postgres database. And it's not included in the default distribution, but there is a plugin that has is pretty good, pretty stable interface to a Postgres database. And I've used that in it. Seemed all right, although I didn't actually write any Python on top of that. Yeah, the tables, and then use the tables from a Postgres database that was running on a server, and then use OpenOffice Base to create the forms. I guess that all depends on how much of OpenOffice you can control via the Python API. And there seems to be a lot that you can do. I just didn't really look into it beyond these few little examples. I tried that once. Well, yeah. My guess is you'd use it in the same way that people use Visual Basic for Microsoft Office. That's what I was trying to find. I wish I would have had a URL before. I'm gonna draw that. Well, with this one, there's a connection mechanism going on. So, yeah, let me just show you that for a second. So this big version is inserts this text into the document, but this little one does the same thing. And this, the bottom was the internal one. I'll show you that. I'm sure once you start writing something more significant, this bottom string is different from the top string, so I imagine there's a little difference, but probably pretty close to the same. Great. anticipating, that's what it is.
Anybody get enough boost today?
I
couldn't the power district please? So you've got a bunch of files open, and file descriptors are going to be socketed, and you have your files and fields are going to be pipes, some routes. You've got a whole bunch of them, and all that big code that the program gets is like you can use file descriptors. And you've also left, you tell them you're not the system, these are all the file descriptors I care about. I want to write the CDs, I want to make some of these, just let me know that any of them. There are other similar system calls that do similar jobs. You use pull and three four and there's person and OS 10 does a similar job, but it's not considered a similar job. Main loops in GUI until it gets import it like this, it'll just choose whatever reactor is available. In this case, it'll be just selecting on this default. And you just tell the main loop to run. That's how that works. It doesn't do anything about it, but it runs. If you want to do something useful, just stop making the code for doing something useful. It's still the reactor that you care about. Something that's going to happen on TCP port. Want to sort of implement the finger protocol. You have the finger and I think people like to use them to use the We're going to tell the reactor that when we care about this port, we're going to listen on it. If somebody connects on there, then you should use this finger factory object that we've instantiated. You should use that. Create something to talk to whatever question. I'm going to go over what factories and protocals are in a second. same version, so we can figure out this. We'd like to do that. We'd like to do solution. Have we done some kind of program before?
Thank you.
yeah, we actually want to do something with that. So we were just in this protocol, we looked at the final method for that. Obviously, when the connection is made, the other one, this method will now be called the acquisition protocol for us. And all we're going to do is, pretty much the same program that we start. Can we try to connect to it now? Should happen. This is just like, yeah. We want to be a little bit more useful than this one. Let's tell the user something. Let's change this to instead of inheriting from protocol, we're going to inherit from the main receiver, which is sort of a convenience subclass of it. There are a lot of those. Or something that's a line base where the other side is going to send one and the other side is going to send one back. This line receiver is a little bit more. When we receive a line from the user, first one that we receive, we're going to send back to the hello and we're going to disconnect. Something actually useful with data, we might consider having our server factory do a little bit more and keeping some state inside of it. Let's give it a dip. And then here in the field protocol, we'll just look up status. Thank you. Yeah, we can. This is what you said. This thing would have been falling out of context everywhere, so it wouldn't have collected any information in the list. Or this thing that would have been directly down to the open door. Now we get into some of the more interesting stuff. Nothing consistent that you ever do is wrong. Something else. Mm-hmm. Anything that's going to take any time, it's not good. It's not good. It's taking any time. It's just a good thing. And she comes on by. I'm pretty much always going to do that. If you're reading from the network, obviously, you can't talk about it. You'll be able to go back and do whatever else you want. Because if something blocks, implicitly, nothing else will do with it. So let's build it into our app. Let's say that when someone asks for a status, we're not just going to look it up in the dictionary, we're going to fetch it from the website. Here, this deferred right here is a promise that at some future point, the contract will be the square of return. After we get it, we might do something to the deferred version. What sort of network do you think you need to get somebody's status? Takeaways from this lesson is that this kind of sucks. go into details about the first word. And it's both simple and complicated. And it comes from the right to the right. It's the could you specify what? Side by side. You can also shortcut the ellipsis functions for this and go back. Or you can look at this and add their back. extension just to make sure, because if you know this, everything you put is all the rest is just utilities, classes.
Some example of big code, a more complex, twisted curving that you showed. So it's not refining the value of this direction. But then we could turn them out to the limits and then this would be. One of the nicer utilities of this group is can't access the terminal into it also. There's a good web server implementation, just a good framework for having resources and paths. Just to let you do threads, if you need to do threads, if there's some of the function that you need to call that has to block control, or whatever, after that, you write that function, find it, change it, you know, you call it. You can tell the reactor to run something in such a thread. Creates a new thread, it is always your responsibility, always to handle, to arrange for that to be fired. If you didn't create a new thread, you should never fire. There was an error in parsing the values. When you make the deferred, you arrange for the callback or the return back. able to help program this sub process. There's a very similar interface to calling the program under the Twisted framework and having folks in programs for the actual thing she is doing. Same data. It's just another thing to call for the props to work. There's a very decent database communication layer. Well, there's a low level one built in with Twisted, and there's an adapter that low level one makes it happen just like this. So it's a little bit of a lower stuff you'd expect. You make a request and you get that inferred, and the data is available from the database. So there's work to be done in some of the, some of these aren't just documented as they could be, but they're work to be done in the project. If it's a pretty stable to the first draft to be done, it has been produced. people hate to think about this, they need like drawbacks. So it makes it hard to do. If it is easy for me to think in this way, I think it's a lot simpler than the multi-threaded filters. There's a lot of work in multi-threaded filters to work with the same thing that doesn't work. running instead of like, so just be like, this job, you know, like, this is the new one. Which one it was. Just because of the people we have to run the units, be depending. There's some high tech factors that we need to set up. Says there's a very active new school. And it's, it is pretty close to that. But they do seem to have stuff. I really like the whole interface thing. Informing you interface, making sure something interface, checking the contract with the interface that's really good. It's like that's what they do. They use soaps and voice that way. Yes. And soap really uses this kind of sound. Informant is written by using one of the things, like I mentioned, Apple uses it under the covers in the vehicle. This is the software that has it there. Okay. untwisted the preamp.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.